The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
In about 1980 or so, I went down to Tassajara, the Zen monastery, to be a practitioner down there. And on the way down, my ride stopped in Carmel, I think, Carmel Valley, the bookstore. And I just wandered through the bookstore and I pulled down a book from the spiritual shelves. But I pulled it down kind of at random and opened the book at random and read a sentence and closed the book and put it back on the shelf. And that one sentence then reverberated, stayed with me for quite some time when I came to the monastery. And the sentence that I read was something like, I don't remember exactly now anymore, but it was something like, the primary problem people have comes from holding back, from holding back, resistance, holding back, something like that. And as, I don't know what the context of that was. I just read that one sentence. And the fact that it was stated negatively, I thought, well, it occurred to me that I would restate it positively. And to the question of, the solution of life is to participate more fully. And so this idea of participating became one of my practice phrases for part of my time at the monastery. And so partly for me, then the practice was, how can I participate more fully with what I'm doing? How can I participate with what I'm doing? And soon after I had that kind of idea, that kind of practice, kind of direction, I was assigned to the kitchen at Tassajara to work in the kitchen. And this was rather a disappointment for me because I'd gone to the monastery to meditate. we meditated a fair amount. But if you worked in the kitchen, you didn't meditate so much. I think you got to meditate two times a day or something. It wasn't so much. So I was a little bit disappointed, but there I was in the kitchen with this practice, how to participate more fully with what's going on. And it was me and the carrots. How do I participate in chopping these carrots or these onions or whatever? And because we were cooking for, I don't know what it was, 40, 50 people, there were a lot of carrots and onions and different things to chop. And the first few months I was in the kitchen, one of the primary things I did was chop. And what surprised me as I was thinking about this participation kind of approach was how much I was not participating in chopping the vegetables. I was not interested in chopping vegetables. Chopping vegetables was not spiritual practice. And I was, it wasn't really where I was at. And what was it really at was up there in the Zendo, the meditation hall. And so in my first period of chopping vegetables, I was paying attention to what I was doing. I found out that I was turning my body kind of away from the vegetables, the chopping board, towards the door. really I was only working with my right hand, really. My left body, part of my body, just was not there for this activity. So I would turn my body around and just face the carrot. Okay, it's you and me. And then after a while, my body would turn away. Come on. The carrot was participating. So I had this practice of, what it's like to really be there for this activity of chopping a vegetable and not, the same thing happened there as happens in meditation. My mind would wander away into other places and other times and thoughts and worries and all kinds of things. And I could see both physically that there are ways in which I wasn't really fully there for the experience. And mentally, I wasn't there fully for the experience. And so I turned myself over. Okay, let's try again. Let's try again. Let's be there for this thing. And it got to be after a while that I was actually able to stay kind of there, and I got to really enjoy it. And I looked forward to when there were 5 pounds of onions. just kind of wail away, and got really into it. And so it was really nice kind of to really be there for it. And I kind of, that kind of was my whole kind of way of being in the kitchen, was kind of, okay, how can I really fully be here, even though I didn't want, partly I wanted to be somewhere else. And one of the surprises of that time was that, you know, I got to meditate a lot less. But there was some way in which that more full attempt to participate, be there in the kitchen, chopping vegetables and all that, translated to how my meditation went when I did meditate. And many times I found that, sometimes I remember there were times when I would work in the kitchen to the last possible moment that I could. Because, I don't know, partly I had to, I don't know. And then I would, you know, do whatever I do to get out of there and put on my robes. And everything in a Zen monastery, a lot of things are choreographed down to the second. So I would have it all worked out so that I could work as far as long as I could and then put on my robe and walk in through the meditation hall door just when they were going to close it, because you couldn't go in after a certain time. So I had it down pretty well. And I would sit down, and rather than being frazzled from all the activity in the kitchen, I would sit down and I would just be there. Just there I was. And everything else would drop away, you know, the kitchen, things. And I was surprised how often it happened that it seemed like the more I kind of participated fully in the activity of the kitchen, the more it supported me than to be fully present for meditation. And in fact, that was also kind of the phrase for meditation often was, how can I be here more fully in this activity of meditation? And the same thing happened there where, you know, it was both a physical thing and a mental thing to participate. And I felt fortunate to be doing Zen practice because Zen put a lot of emphasis on the body, on posture. I struggled with the posture, but it still, you know, this very struggle meant that I was connected and involved, trying to participate. And so I would really try to be there with my posture, be in the activity of sitting as much as I could. And then the same thing happened in my mind. You know, wandered off sometimes, this, that way, that way. And so the practice there was also, but so many times I could see how I was in the kitchen translated to how I was in the meditation hall. And there were other times where it wasn't such a wonderful story. There were other times where I was frazzled, upset, anxious, worried, whatever going on, what's going on in the kitchen. And then I would come and sit, and that would be the kind of what I had to work with and deal with. But the more I could fully be in the kitchen, just do that simple activity of whatever I was doing and kind of burn myself up in that activity in a sense, more often that translated to having that full kind of connection and concentration in my meditation as well. So is it true for you that holding back resistance is a source of suffering? Are there ways in which you hold back? And are there ways that you can participate more fully with what you're doing that supports you, that's helpful? And how what would that look like? And the two themes that I kind of like to offer is one has it's physical, has to do with your body, what you do with your body, how you are with your body when you do things. When I was in Japan at the monastery there, I would sometimes carry the rice from the kitchen into the dining room, and I'd carry the pot with one hand, and the other monks would then get upset with me. Gil, you have to carry rice with two hands. And there was a variety of reasons for that, but part of it was, you know, when you're going to do something, you want to do it fully, you want to really be there for that activity. And if you carry with one hand, you know, around, you only half of you is involved. If you bring it with two hands. Or when you offer something to someone, if you offer it with two hands, you're actually bringing yourself much more into it. You're participating much more. But if you kind of just go like that, you know, here, you know, toss it to them, you know, it's nice, maybe, but it's not doesn't have the same fullness of connection and participation if you use two hands. And that was something also I learned from Zen practice, was this value of kind of, you know, just using both sides of my body, using both hands when it was appropriate, when I did things. And much of Buddhism, we have this custom of bowing, putting hands together. And that also, you know, putting two sides together. So we're all there, we're completely there for the activity of offering a respect or appreciation of someone. So we're there, you know, all of us is there. So, you know, but then we don't. We resist, we hold back sometimes. Some of us do. And what are the reasons for that? What are the motivations for that? I think understanding that is very helpful. And to the degree to which fear might be a reason, doubt might be a reason, It might be a way of protecting ourselves because we don't want to be involved fully. Or maybe we've been fully involved, participated in something in the past, and we got burnt. So I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to love again. No way. Whatever it might be. Or maybe we've been inappropriately involved. We kind of got involved too closely, too intensely with something that was not appropriate for the activity we were involved in. And so we kind of felt, oh, well, I don't know how to do this. And so sometimes it's a matter of learning what's appropriate in different situations. And so one of the very famous Zen phrases that kind of, it was a Zen monk who was asked, you know, after a lifetime of Zen practice, do you have a teaching for me? And he said, his answer was, an appropriate response. So finding out the appropriate response, and I love this, the teaching of the appropriate response, because it's not giving a set answer or set teaching. This is the way it should be. This is the truth. But rather the truth, what the response, the kind of what's true in the moment, has to do with response with what's happening here, the conditions, the situation, the people we're with. And every situation we're in requires a different response. And so to participate more fully, also in my understanding of Zen practice, meant also to have a question in your mind. What is it that this situation requires? What is this situation asking of me? So what's the appropriate response? How do I participate in a way that's just right? And sometimes it's appropriate to sit back. So I had a Zen teacher who said that when he met with people, he would kind of like to, he kind of would pay attention to their body language to know how he would respond to them, how he'd be with them. And if they were kind of like slumping all over, you know, he would slump. So they felt kind of comfortable. Or if they were sitting up straight, he would sit up straight. He had a little issue about being intimidating. So it was kind of important for him to kind of do that way, I guess. So the appropriate response for him, I think, had some part to do with who he was. So there's kind of feedback system where we all kind of in it together. But in whatever it is, it's participating. How do we enter into this particular situation here and find out in this situation how we can be, you know, what's appropriate, what's needed, what's going on now, as opposed to thinking, oh, the grass is greener somewhere else. And I know in the past, hopefully in the past, you know, I've been in like parties or something and talking to someone, and my thought was, oh, I wonder if it might be more interesting to talk to the persons over there. That's not very nice. It's embarrassing to tell you, right? And the grass is greener somewhere else. And then I go over there, and then my mind goes, oh, I wonder over there. Over there. It's kind of a disease of the mind. The over there disease. Over there, it's better than here. It must be better over there. And so it can kind of leave kind of a restless quality. And but just okay. Here is here. So what? How do I participate here? How do I live with here? How do I accept here? How do I engage in here? And what happens in me when I don't do that? What happens takes me away from that. To understand that, that's the mindfulness practice, to see clearly what's going on. And then another aspect of this participation. Again, to go back to my Zen training, Zen practice was that of appreciation. So not only to participate what's going on here, but to do it with some appreciation of what's here. And the kind of most representative teaching moment in Zen for me of that was after we did a sesshin at Green Gulch. And right across the aisle from me, where I was sitting, right across the walkway in the hall, across from me was this Japanese visiting monk. And the custom there was that the beginning, first day, we're given a cup of tea, a teacup, to keep by our seat for 7 days. And then once a day in the afternoon, they come serve us tea and a cookie. And then at the last day, the seventh day, they come and they retrieve that teacup, take it back to the kitchen and wash it and store it away. So it was the seventh day, and I was sitting facing this monk who was, you know, four or five feet away. So I can kind of see what he was doing. And when the time came to return the teacup, he did something which was not in the choreographed routine. You know, and because you kind of knew what you're supposed to do, you're not supposed to do a lot of extra stuff. He bowed to his teacup. He clearly bowed to his teacup before he had to. He didn't have to, and at least that didn't seem to me. I don't really know what was going on for him. But what the effect it had on me was I felt, wow, this guy is appreciating and thanking his teacup, an inanimate object. That's something, you know, I understand appreciating and thanking people, but an inanimate object. And that was kind of the representative moment, kind of this Zen aspect of appreciating what's there as well. Appreciating what it's done for us, the support it gives us, appreciating just its own kind of existence, appreciating perhaps the cause and conditions that brought it there, and the potter who made it, the people who washed it and took care of it and brought it there, the people who served tea. There's a whole world that the teacup kind of represents. So both these things, the participation and the appreciation, involve a deeper connection to what is here. And it's one of the things I hope that we're looking for in mindfulness practice is how to meet or be present in our life in a deeper way. And part of what I like about the teaching of depth is that it doesn't require the situation to be different from what it is. We don't have to get rid of it and change and make something go away. But rather, can we discover it from a new perspective, that of depth. And the analogy that hopefully works for this is that of comparing a two-dimensional world to a three-dimensional world. And a two-dimensional world might be fascinating, like television is two-dimensional, right? If you think about it, it's a two-dimensional world. But you know, I think that three-dimensional world in a nice sunny spring day is, you know, hopefully much more rich than, deeper than, you know, the two-dimensional world of television. Or if you spend a lot of time swimming on the surface of the ocean and contending with the waves and all the things that go on there, and then at some point you realize you can dive under the water and you realize there's a whole depth there, a world, a fascinating world under the water. Some people are just in awe of what goes on under the surface you can't see from the land. You realize there's depth there. So the same thing with our life here. In many ways, we can think of our daily, busy, active, thought-filled mind world as being two-dimensional. And certainly, if we're living in our life through the filter, through the medium of our thinking, and that's the only way we really connect, or the primary way we connect, what we think, what we believe, it's as beautiful as the thoughts and beliefs can be, it's two-dimensional compared to a kind of a fullness of the experience. And that fullness of experience, that depth of experience, has a lot to do, again, I think, with the body. To be there with your body, present in your body, and sensing and feeling your experience through your body as much as through what you think about what's going on, what you think about yourself. So, to be here fully, and then be interested, okay, how do I sense, how do I feel my way into the depth of what's going on here and now? And there's always depth in any situation. There's a depth of you and your history, your life, your thoughts, your feelings, there's the depth of the people you're involved in, their history, their feelings, their motivations, their, you know, all the different aspects of who they are. And there's depth in the interconnected quality of what's happening in any given situation. There's a two-dimensional world of a teacup. That when a teacup is just a teacup. And then there's a three-dimensional world of a teacup. And we realize a teacup is connected to a lot more things. It's connected to the potter and the people who brought it to you and the people who cleaned it and the people who filled it and the people who, you know, and then it's connected to the soil, the clay that the teacup came out of, and the person who dug it out, and you know, and that clay connected to other things, and you know, and it's a whole world of connection that some people find very, very meaningful to feel that they're connected to. If it sounds a little bit too romantic, then I think that I almost feel like as our life has become more complicated, that it's important for us to take some responsibility for the three-dimensional world that we often don't see. So how many of you know what happens to your poop when it goes out down your toilet? Out of sight, out of mind, right? Two-dimensional world. But, you know, take some responsibility for your trash and for your stuff, and rather than saying, oh, someone else is going to take care of it. Now there's this whole thing about all the medication gets flushed down the toilet, and the effect it has on the environment. So, you know, to take into account the three-dimensional interconnected world is part of being fully present and appreciating here as well. And the last thing I'd like to say is that there's something really fascinating that happens when you enter into the moment, enter into what's happening here as fully as you can. It can seem like a narrowing down. And in a sense it is, maybe. Because maybe you're not thinking about what's far away anymore. Narrowing down. But as you more fully you're here and kind of still, your mind gets stiller or concentrated or present or mindful here, there's a way in which it seems to opens up as well. Opens up to three-dimensional quality. So for example, if you're really fully here for one thing, the mind gets still. The mind gets more concentrated. The mind stops being fragmented and going off in many different directions. And as the mind gets still, the mind becomes more expansive. And the mind starts feeling like a beautiful thing. Awareness starts feeling like a beautiful thing. And awareness, our awareness, which often is not, you know, it's kind of invisible. You don't, the fish doesn't see the fish, the water it swims in. Often we don't see the awareness we swim in. But as we get stiller, the awareness that we have, it's always here, becomes a larger reality, becomes more present, more aware. And that sense of awareness gives a sense of expansiveness, or kind of opens up. So it's kind of a narrowing of attention as we enter into the me and the carrot. And then as the mind gets still, awareness opens up, becomes expansive again, and we become more aware of kind of the wider world. Isn't that beautiful? I think it is. In case you're worrying about what you're going to lose, about participating. So those are my thoughts this morning. So now it's your turn if you have comments or thoughts or questions. Hey, anybody want to participate in today's talk?
This isn't very well thought out, but I think sometimes I have a hard time knowing when it's skillful just to totally be with what's happening and when it's more skillful not to. And I know that's very vague, but...
It's a great question, and each situation is going to require a different answer. But since, you know, the first thing that I thought about when you pick up the mic, I thought, kids, because we share being parents, right? And so this morning, I was alone at home with my two kids. My wife's off. And so I didn't really want to play with them. one of life's problems is we hold back, we resist, right? So at some point my son went down to the basement and came out with this long foam tube that he kind of has that he likes to make, he calls it loop-de-loops, that he puts marbles in and drops and they go around and around. And just, but it requires a lot of work and tape and holding and these long tube. And so I entered his world and helped him and set it up. And it was, you know, I didn't really want to do it, but I thought that this is what's needed here. This is what's appropriate. His five-year-old needs contact from his dad a little bit. He needs some help. He needs to kind of get involved and get connected to something. And for me just to kind of resist it right now, I think he's going to feel the resistance somehow and feel a little bit more like he's lacking. So I entered into that world for about 5 minutes. That's not very long, right? 5 minutes, and when he was all engaged, I had to take a shower now. So it went on to take care of other things. I came out of the shower, and at some point, it was clear that some more contact for me was needed. So I read Calvin and Hobbes to him. For a while, I have no idea if he understood any of it, but he happily was there. And then I said, okay, now I've got to do something else. So it was this give and take. It was like just understanding no situation that something was needed here. But if I just kind of gave in to all his requests, you know, it wouldn't be healthy for him. And so there has to be an appropriate, not playing anymore, you know. And that's part of the healthy participation, you know. So there has to be this discernment that goes on, figuring out what's needed. You know, so sometimes people are unreasonable, or they ask for too much from us, or we have to know how to work with that. And sometimes we participate fully by being fully present, facing someone, not being there half-heartedly, fully present, looking at them with care and friendship, and saying, "Not now." So that's my best answer for a good question, but vague enough. Unless you want to ask further.
That's great, that description about your kid, because my mind went to where I work and how easy it is to have aversion for different workmates, different situations, and how it has to be different in each moment, because sometimes I have something that I can do that I feel is positive about a situation, and sometimes you were talking about holding back, and there's also the other one of getting too involved in drowning in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of the interplay between those two, if you could talk to that, Pema Chodron talks about that, not drowning totally in it, but also not pulling back, kind of that midpoint is where the bodhicitta starts to develop, the heart opens. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to that, please?
I'm not sure I can talk to what Pema Chodron's talked about, but I think that if we use as a reference point or as a locus for our practice, our body, then are we connected? Are we really fully here in our body? And if the body is tight, resisting, holding back, the body will teach you, show you what's going on. If we're over-involved, then chances are relatively good that we've lost touch with our body as well. But if we stay in touch with our body and know what's going on here, then you'll be much more likely to know when you're getting involved in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. If you lost touch with your body, chances are that you're in danger of an unhealthy involvement. And so then if you're all involved in your body, connected, participating in your body, here with your body, it's like I was with the carrots. I was really there with the carrots. I wasn't lost in the carrots. I was just standing on my both feet solidly on the kitchen floor, engaged. So are you solidly in your body? Are you balanced? Are you connected? Are you here in your body? How are you in your body? Your body is a great teacher. And then once you have that kind of stability of your body, you're stable and present there, you're kind of have a sense of presence with your body. You're not present just with your mind, thinking you're aware, but you're actually present with your whole body for something. Then what's appropriate? What's the right way of being in a situation? And then about bodhicitta, you know, the idea of compassion, you know, whatever. As you began to talk, for whatever reason, my mind reminded itself that when there's conflict, sometimes I have to deal with someone. If I can, I'll try to meet with the person or talk to the person directly, even on the phone, because I found often enough that my own machinations in my mind about what the problem is and the person, that person's not. Sometimes it's unrealistic, but as soon as I meet the person, that person's a person. The person's not just an idea. And then my whole relationship to the conflict or the difficulty or whatever changes when I'm actually in the presence of the person. When I'm not in the presence of the person, then it's like email is a really good example like that. Sometimes I get these communications over email that, what? You know, that's angry or disrespectful or that's odd or off or something. And then I remind myself, oh, it's just email. Let's call the person up. And then I find out that, you know, that we can have a good connection. But if I react to what I interpreted was an email, then it could just make it worse. So anyway. So I saw a hand over out there. You pass it all the way out.
On the theme of conflict, I've participated in some political rallies in San Francisco lately, which is pretty unusual for me. But could you say a word maybe about intention? To go to these rallies and be fully there, it's really chaotic. And I kept having to think, my intent, I think I'm here because such and such and not because of such and such.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to stay oriented in trying to be peaceful.
One of the themes is how to be true to yourself, and how to participate and be true to yourself. How to stay connected to your intentions you have. And often in a crowd of people, it's very commonly known, like people are very influenced. So you can be carried away by other people's anger or upsetness. And so how do you stay grounded and centered in yourself while you're participating? Participating doesn't mean that we give ourselves over to something. It means we're dancing, we're engaged in a wise way. We're there for the experience. But fully participating sometimes means saying no. It could be that fully participating in there doesn't mean accepting and going along with it. It might be appropriate to say, I'm really here. I'm part of this group. I'm involved in everything. And because I'm a part of this group, I need to speak up and say, this doesn't feel right. And you stand there, ready to take the group's response. Okay, I'm here. And so maybe they feel that, and they feel that there's a way of kind of going back and forth. So this woman, Leslie Grant, who's speaking here today, she told a beautiful story of when the Olympic torch was going through San Francisco. She went to one of the demonstrators and, against the occupation of Tibet. But she said, I didn't know this, but she claimed or said that when she got there, that the Chinese have actually flew in all these counter-demonstrators from China. You know this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know it except what she told me. They flew them in, and that also there'd be, properly trained counter-demonstrators. And amazing thing. And so it was, she was one group, and they were there another group. And for a while, they were yelling at her, and then stayed very calm and engaged them. And after a little while, they had a calm conversation. And she said, I know the Dalai Lama. I spent time around him, and, I was a Tibetan nun. And let me tell you, some of the things that some things you're saying here, I know the other side. Let me tell you a little bit. And she talking about malas and the rituals and all kinds of things. And they were kind of like, kind of fascinated. And I don't know what the consequence was of her conversation, but I think it's quite something that they had a peaceful conversation after all this yelling that started initially. So there's an example of someone who was there and found a way to participate in a way that expressed some deeper intention besides animosity or something, but was able to connect. So how to participate and be true to ourselves is the big challenge. And some people try to be true to themselves by staying alone. So it's not an adequate answer to your question, but it'll have to do. So maybe that's enough. Oh, one more here, and then we'll go.
When you talk about being so present in the moment, does out of that necessarily flow a sense of bliss and great peace and joy?
I don't know necessarily. It depends on the situation you're involved in. If you're involved in some kind of terrible crisis, someone's hurt and they need to be helped, and you're fully there for it, and I'm not going to feel blissful and joyful. It'd be inappropriate to start whistling Dixie. My friend's leg just broke. I may want to be fully there and help. And it's very helpful to have practiced mindfulness and knowing self well. Then in situations where you're really needed, you know yourself well enough, you know what your possible limitations are, that you can work with them and overcome them so you can really be there to help in the situation. So the joy and the bliss is maybe partly dependent on the situation you're in. The peace kind of might be there, but I prefer to use the word non-conflict. Even in situations of social conflict, there's a way of being fully present for that in a healthy way, so you don't feel any inner conflict. And so there might not be any inner conflict, and that inner conflict with what's going on, or with yourself in the situation, some situations would translate to peace, translate to joy. In other situations, I think you wouldn't think it's peaceful, because it's, whatever is going on. But maybe after it's over, you were there so fully for the situation you're in that not much lingers. And I've been in situations where, after I did something, I spent a lot of time thinking, and I wish it was different, I said something different, how could I have been that way, or caught up in it all for quite a long time. And other times when I've been fully present in a way that I kind of burned up in the situation. Each situation was finished in itself. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. Each situation was complete, and more or less complete. So when it was over, I didn't have this lingering processing that had to happen. So in that sense, when it was complete, I could go back to be peaceful. Is that an adequate answer? Adequate for now?
Thank you.
So we have our potluck today, and if you didn't bring anything, please stay if you'd like to stay, and if you would introduce yourself to people. And in fact, this might be a good time if you see someone sitting. If you've kind of been in IMC for a while and you see someone near you you don't recognize, say hello if you'd like. Even if some of you don't stay for the potluck, it's nice to participate and feel like we're part of it, of a community, or feel like we're welcoming for everyone who might come. So enjoy the potluck. Thank you.